You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC. So if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Three 12 packs of sea breezes deep. Like, you're not, I'm not listening to anything you have to say right now.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, Marvel Comics writer Murewa Ayodele. And now your host. Happy to announce there will be no new tariffs on this show. Dece Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am Dece. Thank you. Welcome back to the. Thank you for hanging out. Welcome back to the Social Hour. We appreciate you being here. I had the last 2 weeks off, as you guys know. I had the second issue of my comic book, Killstand, came out. Huge debut. We had a great time at Free Comic Book Day. If you missed it, sucks to suck, man. You got to come next year. But it was a great event. Appreciate everyone who came out. The support for this book has been awesome. So we do have the main two covers and the foil still available. The limited edition is all sold out and no more being printed. So again, sucks to suck, guys. You got to get in faster. But we appreciate you guys coming out and supporting the book. Hit us up on inferno.earth, the website. The shop is live. You can go check out all the books. We're going to be running some deals, some package deals to get number one. If you haven't got that yet, get you caught back up. And yeah, good to go. And check out the calendar. We've got a ton of conventions coming up across the country. We'll be touring all over the place and bringing the book on the road. Also, as for me, stand-up comedy, I still do that for a living. I will be at Bourbon and Branch tonight in Spring Branch, Texas, so come check that out if you're in the local area. And I will be at Remedy, a hall in Comfort, Texas, on the 21st, and also my calendar says somewhere in San Antonio, Texas on May 30th. I don't know the venue, apparently, because I'm bad at my job. But I'm good when I'm on stage at my job. The admin part sucks. It's not funny at all. So go to my website. I'm sure I or someone will be posting information about where this mystery show in San Antonio is on the 30th. But maybe I'll just go downtown and scream jokes at people like a schizophrenic. It happens. Again, convention stuff, comedy stuff. If you're in the Dallas area of Texas, I'll be at the convention in Frisco, Texas on the 17th, and I'm doing a signing of half price books in San Antonio on the 31st. Oh, like I'll be in San Antonio 2 days in a row doing stuff. So check it out, guys. Go to the calendars, dece.comedy on Instagram or inferno.earth on Instagram. Get all the information. Other than that, you know what to do. We're going to get into it with our guest today because it's later where he is. He's in the future. Hopefully he can tell us if we survive the robot apocalypse or whatever is coming down the pipeline for us. Please welcome to the stage. He is a writer, much more. I'm going to welcome the show now all the way from Nigeria, Murewa Ayodele. How are you?
Yeah. Fine. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You got my name perfectly.
Did I? Okay, great. can you do mine? Because mine's confusing for so many people, too.
So, yeah. Okay, can I do yours?
Yeah. Let's see if you can do it.
Okay, so Dece Casillas, is that correct?
You got very close. So it's Dece Casillas. So
Casillas.
Okay. It's very unpopular right now in America, but I am Latino. It's a bad time to be Mexican in America. What can I say?
I know what you mean.
You know, so yeah, you get it. I need to add like a Berg or a Steen or a Stein to the end of my name and just pretend like I'm Jewish for the next 3 years or something to throw them off. So I live too close to the border too. It wouldn't take them much to deport me. but you know, the good news is I still have family down there, so it'd be really easy to. I got farms I could work on. I got a strong back still.
So either way, you'll be making your money.
Yeah, I'll be fine. It's all right. I'll get some more sun down there, a little outside time. Gets, you know, food's better, I'm sure.
Definitely.
So yeah, man, thanks for being. You are from Nigeria, correct? You still live there?
Yeah, I still live in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I mean, I'm sure you've been to America, right?
Never. Not once.
Do you want to come, or is that your choice to have never been here?
especially now that the book is kind of taking off, I would actually do like to come and get to meet people, especially, you know, because I grew up watching American TV. Cartoons to everything. So I want to see how all these things that are just theoretical in my head, to actually see how it is in real life. So I'm curious, and to actually meet people and everything. So yeah, there's that curiosity. But I kind of gave up after, which is another country and has nothing to do with it. But I kind of gave up when I tried applying for a visiting visa with the UK. And it just felt like a waste of money and my waste of time when I got rejected. I was like, you know what? All of you, F you, I'll stay in my country.
I'll just stay where it's great here. You know, you should just stick with that vision of whatever you have of America from 80s television, because you would get here and be greatly disappointed. You know they say like never meet your heroes. You'd be like, ah shit, this is just dirtier and than I thought it would be. Why is everyone homeless and on drugs? Whatever media painted it as, and you know, utopia people think of it as, like, it's not that. So yeah.
And here I thought everybody would have guns and they'll be screaming America with bald eagles and flags.
Yeah, not so much, man. I think there's a lot of confusion as to how people feel about it these days. Or probably has been for quite some time. Maybe that's why I keep, again, moving closer to the border of my home people, so I can just eventually just be like, you know what, I'll just hop over this. You know, they don't stop you when you go over the wall the other direction. They're like, whatever, man, that's fine, we don't care. So what is it like? I have no frame of reference what it's like growing up in Nigeria. You know, like, I assume you grew up there, spent your whole life there.
Yeah, I spent my whole life here. At least from what I've seen in the media, I think Nigeria is kind of close to the US in the sense that depending on the state you're in, you can have very different experience.
Yeah.
I think if you're from Lagos State, which is like the most popular state in Nigeria, you know, you hear Lagos, you know, and Lagos, different, depending on the pronunciation, you know, and that's like the city, you know, super exposed, everything. You could meet people of different races, especially if you're like in the islands there and everything. I know a lot of, like, my friends that grew up there, you know, was exposed to comic books, you know, and you know, all those full-on experience. You know, while I lived in like this small town called Osun State, you know, and that state is named after a river goddess, you know. Okay. So it's much, it's a much different experience. There's more spirituality when it comes to the traditional religion here. It felt strange because my parents didn't grow up here. So my parents always seem to know more things than like every other person's parents. So when I come to school and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, someone was saying this stuff about this cartoon about Disney, what's Disney? And they're like, you don't know Disney?
Yeah.
How did we fail you? And stuff like that. You know, and then they just be like, you know what, just watch all this, you know, watch Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, everything, you know, just here, you know. So most of the education I got when it comes to American entertainment was probably through my parents. And it's always like them being disappointed, like, oh, sorry, our bad would show you some of these things because we got that because we didn't grow up here, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and things like that. So, yeah. So it's even till now where I still have that kind of experience, you know, maybe because I think my dad studied English. So
okay.
Sometimes it could even be like some big popular literature, maybe something written by, you know, Shakespeare or something, you know, and it's like, how did you not read this in school, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, let me tell you about the story, you know. And at the same time too, so most of my experience when it comes to like literary experience is been through my parents mostly.
Sure.
Because even traditional stories too, I heard a lot of them from him, because he also kind of grew, his grandmother kind of was always close by when he was growing up as a kid. So he learned all these traditional Yoruba stories too, that he would tell us as kids, you know, stories about the tortoise and stuff, you know, and
okay.
You know, so those ones too were fun growing up. So yeah, it's a different experience here, you know.
Yeah, did you say where are your parents from? What part of Africa are they from?
They're from Nigeria, but it's in Oyo State.
I thought you meant they're from another country in Africa. No, they are from Nigeria. Got it.
Yeah, but for different states, you know, Ibadan is also close to Lagos. It's also a very big city.
Got it. Okay.
Civilized. Ibadan is the largest city in West Africa.
Okay.
So they got all that, you know, especially during very early on, before this current regime in Nigeria. Nigeria was, I think, split into like three districts and stuff. Ibadan was like the capital of that district of the Southwest, you know. So they had all those full exposure and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So Osun State was a newer state, you know, that newer state they cut out of Oyo State, a very small state. So and then they moved there just, you know, because there's going to be need for jobs and stuff like that.
Sure.
So came here to work for the government, you know, as civil servants, you know. So that's why I was there. So the exposure level was very different, you know. So yeah, it's you could, for example, in some other states, you would need to probably learn English as you speak the traditional language there.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you could almost survive solely without knowing how to speak English at all.
Oh, really?
At least when I was growing up. So yeah, so you know, different stuff like that. Yeah.
So were you taught English growing up, or did you learn English later in school, or?
No, yeah, you learn it in school and everything, but it's just.
So they teach it from a very early age.
From a very early age, but you might just never need it because, you know, when you go to the market and you try to buy something, you just, you know, in Lagos, for example, because there are people of different tribes there.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have people of different tribes. So it's safe to speak a form of English, either the natural English or pidgin English. You might need to speak some form of English when you're taking the bus.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who your driver is. Your driver might be of this tribe or another tribe, you know?
Yeah.
But
here,
probably all the people you interact with will probably be of the same tribe throughout. So you might never need to speak English. You just speak the language of that tribe.
Yeah.
And you would survive, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's so funny because, you know, I mean, it's partly because
ugly Americans, just self-centered and don't care about anywhere else in the world. But like, you know, trying to, you know, like to get a grasp of, I mean, first of all, you know, most, you ask most Americans, they'd probably tell you Africa's a country, where you're like, yeah. You know, they're like, well, it's a little continent, a little more divided than that. You know, so it's, there's just not like a concept of the scale of it. And like you said, how you're in within that, you know, you do have, you know, within Nigeria alone, which is, you know, I don't know the size of that country compared to the other countries in Africa. Probably, is it a little on the smaller side compared to other countries in Africa?
It's not that big. It's like average size.
Okay.
But population wise, it's the biggest.
Oh, really? It's, okay.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's the most populous nation in Africa.
Oh, it's on the coast, right? The kind of the west coast. So it's got, I'm guessing being coastal helps population, makes a difference too.
Yeah, it's that probably helps, but not only the coastal. It also has like two major rivers running through it.
Mm.
So probably lots of early migration had lots of places to settle.
Yeah.
You know, you have the River Niger by the west and the River Benue by the right. So two major rivers, you know, and when it comes to human settlements, you usually see more settlements close to rivers.
Yeah.
So having those two, and these are massive rivers, by the way, you know. These are rivers you could have like football pitches inside, you know.
Oh, geez.
That big, so.
That's a hell of, yeah, it's a hell of a river. So, I mean, what's it like, you know, living, because I mean, I think people look at Africa and don't think about how, you know, you're this, because like in America, we are a big piece of land on a continent, you know, like we've got Mexico below us and Canada above us, but it's a big piece of land. But so, I mean, it probably takes, you know, 6 hours to get across Nigeria, something like that, to drive all, you know, I don't know. But like, what's it like? I mean, is it
24 hours?
Is it that much?
Yeah, it's that much. So, but thing is that there are like way bigger countries like Algeria and all those stuff. So landmass wise, it's not small.
Yeah.
But it's not like US where you have like three time zones, you know, it's still one time zone.
How much interconnection between countries do people do over there? I mean, like, are you, you know, like, do people go into other countries often? I mean, what is the process like, you know, like your neighboring countries? Because you're like, I guess, close to Chad and things like that. Like, are those places like you would go to for some reason? Or is it just you're basically in your country and that's where most things happen?
Now, I'm probably going to sound like a proud Nigerian right now. That's probably why some African countries don't like us. But it's very early in our development, Nigeria was developing very fast. There was a particular time where the Nigerian naira was worth far more than the dollar, almost rivaling the pound.
Okay.
You know, so during all those times, it was other countries trying to migrate into Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
So it was more of that. Indians who were trying to move into Nigeria. At that time, I think you could almost have visa-free entry into the UK and stuff like that. But through years of corruption, a civil war, and various things, you know, I don't think our strength at that time too was doing well to the colonial masters too. So they probably preferred us weak so that more manipulations could happen and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So as the economy started to tank and stuff like that, when I became more of the people that migrate out. But despite that, I think we still migrate more towards Ghana. Ghana is in West Africa, but it's also not like our neighboring country. I think South Africa to some extent, but mostly towards, mostly it's countries like the US and the UK and stuff like that. Music, entertainment, we export our entertainment a lot to African countries. So a lot of African countries are usually, you know, overly aware of Nigeria.
Okay.
Either they like us or not, you know, because of our entertainment industry. And yes, because of the way state of Nigeria is, as much as they also love us as far as regards, you know, entertainment and everything, because of our music, everything, we also have a lot of bad eggs too, you know, when it comes to like internet fraud and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So when we move to smaller countries as well, they usually don't like us too, because imagine a smaller country where the economy is still, you know, building and everything, and then a Nigerian fraudster comes in and starts spending millions there.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, suddenly all your ladies are no longer interested in the men there, and you know,
they got like, their Nigerian prince arrived.
Just Nigerian men. You know?
So, all right, humble brag.
Yeah, and then you know, it's also kind of can make your economy also unstable, even as government. So besides the social thing of like, you know, that you know, so things like that. So sometimes in some countries, they're like, yeah, we like your stuff, but we don't like you people personally. So
sure.
Please don't come.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
yeah. So we've had issues of African countries actually banning Nigerian immigrants.
Oh, yes. Yeah. See, I mean, I feel like that's something that people who don't live in that area probably don't consider, that, like, you know, they're like, oh, they're African. You just go to, but like, yeah, you're still going to another country with another culture and other people and other, you know, religions and languages. Like, there are social and cultural barriers that divide drastically.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. There's so many African. Yes, there might be shared culture, but yeah, that also happens even across continents. You know?
Yeah.
Where you can say some things about your experience growing up in the 80s or 90s, and someone here will also say, yeah, I remember that. You know, there's that. There's shared experiences like that.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of very, very different things when you start moving from country to country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like you said, you know, I think, yeah, for example, I think when other African nations usually praise Nigerians, I think they praise Nigerians for like, Nigerians always have this huge drive, this very huge drive to succeed, you know. And I think that might be almost inevitable, because I think there was a time when they were doing some statistics where they said, I think one in six Africans are probably Nigerian. That's how much populous we are. So when so many people are in your country, you have to work hard to stand out.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a natural thing. So even if you're going to go through criminal means or straightforward means or anything means, you have to be the best at what you do if you're going to stand out. So that might have creeped in into our own culture naturally, just because of our population, you know.
Yeah.
So when we go elsewhere, it's just like, wait, why are you guys like, why are you working just 8 hours a day and you're okay with it, you know? You know, and like, you know, like, dude, what are you doing with your time, you know?
Yeah.
Why can't you do 15 hours? Why can't you do this? Why can't you know? And it's like, dude, relax. Like, I can't relax, you know?
Yeah, I got stuff to do, man. Like, burning daylight. Well, it paid off for you. Is Nigeria like a safe place generally growing up? What about as like a visitor? Is it a place that people come visit?
I think it helps if you know someone here. Mm. It helps to know someone here.
Yeah. He said it three times, folks. So know someone before you go there.
Yeah. It's safe, but it can be very, very dangerous as well.
Mm.
There are lots of African Americans that come here just, you know, relax, make their hair and everything. A lot of celebrities that come here during Christmas. Like, this last Christmas was crazy.
Really?
It was crazy. Like, yeah. Some people, like, are stuck in traffic. They're like, you know what? I'll just leave my car in traffic. I'll come back later. And, you know, it's that bad because I think probably a lot of all the Black American celebrities, a lot of all these, they were just here to chill and everything, you know. It's so, because it can be fun. Mm-hmm. Nigerians are very, very fun people. So it's fun, it's exciting, it's everything. But it helps to know someone because it can be from small things to you take a cab, you know. If they are aware that you are not sure the pricing, yeah, they're going to increase the price.
Oh, yeah.
Nigerians want to make money. So, yeah, so it's that. So it's going to be from small things, you know, to actual big things like getting kidnapped if you're looking too gullible and stuff.
Yeah.
So never look gullible. Like, even if you don't know what you're doing, you have to pretend like you know what you're doing. You know? It's even like there's some subtle things. Even when I was a kid growing up, you know, because I don't know how to like price like public transport and stuff, like how to like bargain and stuff. So what I do is I always carry the highest denomination notes. So when the person drops me, I just give the person the highest denomination notes and then look away.
Okay.
You know, like, you know the change to give me, you know, and then the person gives me change. And that's because here they are still a little bit, I'm still in a small town where they're still trying to be, you know, stuff like that. But if I should give maybe, that way it will give me the right change, you know, and stuff like that. But if I should ask like, oh, how much, that gives it the way that, oh, he doesn't know.
Yeah, like, so I guess room to be like,
yeah. So sometimes also be like, if it's 200, it would just say, yeah, 500, you know.
Right.
And even if you price it out like 400, it still made double of what it should have been.
Yeah. You know? But I mean, that type of thing is also not exclusive to Nigeria too, which is like, because I've traveled across the world.
And, I'm saying like from the small things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I mean, you know, what I'm trying to say to people listening is like, don't feel like it's just in Nigeria where you're going to experience these things. Like, that'll happen in New Jersey, you know, if you're, you know, people exactly. catch you slipping in a heartbeat, you know, you end up in a shipping container on your way to Epstein's Island. If you don't have your head on a swivel. So, you know, it's like I go to Central America a lot and yeah, same thing. Like you go out of the airport and they know who's not from there, you know. I mean, like, and I speak.
Yeah,
it's also
how you dress, you know.
Yeah,
you see all those people that do those travel guides on Instagram. Watch the way they dress. They never dress flamboyantly.
Yeah,
you know, they dress very casually, very down to earth. The t-shirt they wear doesn't seem new. You know, it doesn't. You know, they try to look. They don't look like tourists.
Just average. Average.
Their skin color is very different. Yeah, look average. Even if they know that they are new, it doesn't look like you're carrying a lot of cash.
Yeah.
You know, why you see some people when you want to go, like, get there first, get to your hotel, then you can wear the expensive goggles, you know, then you can change your clothes and other stuff, you know. That's my own advice, you know. People come to the airport and they're already looking glamorous and you're like, don't, you know.
Yeah, people get an eye out right away, you know. Like, okay. Yeah, then you have your cab driver calling their friends, be like, hey, I just dropped this guy off. He had a real nice gold chain and fat wallet. He's staying at this hotel, you know. I mean, yeah. So what about like like geographically where you grew up? I mean, like, what's the countryside like? What's the wildlife like? I mean, you know, what kind of animals are in that area that are around?
So I think geographically where I stay is called the rainforest region.
Oh, okay.
We have the desert region, but it's not really desert per se, but there are some deserts there. But most of the north, it's savanna, you know, different savanna, Guinea savanna, different savanna of different intensity of heat, you know. I think, I'm not sure. I think you guys call those kind of deserts another kind of name. You know, there's some desert that's just all sand, and there's some deserts where you still see plants and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still, yeah. So, yeah. So I think that's like what we call savanna here of some sorts, you know. The one you see on TV where you see lions and stuff, you know it's hot. You know, if you are strapped there alone, you might probably find it difficult to survive, you know. But it's not as harsh as like maybe let's say the Sahara or something.
Yeah.
So so there's like the savannas and different things like that. But I grew up in the rainforest region. So before the whole global warming and everything, you basically just have, you know, dry season and rainy season. But the dry season sometimes rain will fall still.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so because I stay in Osun State, and the Osun there is named after a river goddess. So that means there's a river running through the state too, a relatively big river, not as big as Niger, of course, but still big, which is River Osun. So so there's a lot of religious activities that happen there once a year.
Okay.
Some festival.
Yeah.
People from all over the world come to visit, you know. So there's a place called Osun Grove, you know, where it's like this. It's not a forest, and it's not like the woods, but it's not a densely packed forest, but it's just like a grove, basically.
Okay.
You know, but you see a lot of artistic African style statues where you walk and stuff like that. It's a very artistic place and stuff like that. There's Nikkei Art Gallery that makes some of our arts from here and gathers them here. It's a very artistic place here. It's seen as a more traditional place because the hometown of all my tribe is Yoruba. Of my tribe is from Ile-Ife. You know, it's from Ile-Ife that the Yoruba tribes spread across Nigeria. So Ile-Ife is also in Osun State. So Osun State is seen as this, almost like this primordial Yoruba state. So, but wildlife, if not killed them all, traditionally, it's things you would see in a jungle mostly, you know.
Yeah.
Apes, elephants a little, hippos, you know, hyenas to some level. Not much of things you would see in a savannah though, but just things you would see in the forest, you know. Those are the kind of things. But you probably won't see any of that because we've occupied most of what would be the rainforest.
Sure. So, they've kind of gone away from the...
So what you see mostly are just maybe goats and chickens, you know.
Oh, yeah. So you don't... But I mean, they're around. You've got... I mean, it's just... That's such a... Like I said, I go to Central America a lot, and when you go to the rainforest there, you're like, okay, they're like, it's like, watch out for jaguars, watch out for, you know, you have to like think about things you don't think about walking down the street in like LA, right?
No, I don't think you would think about it here too, per se. I don't think you would.
Because it's far enough away from the cities now.
Yeah, but we also, we always crack a joke here to say, I think we've killed all the game in our forest.
Okay. Because we've eaten them all. Okay. Make it safe. It's safer now. So,
Even my family in particular, I hope they don't get offended, you know, like my extended family and stuff. We're known for eating like various types of game, you know, you know, from snakes to like different weird stuff, you know. We've eaten them all and they're all sort of delicious, you know. Game is like special cuisine here and stuff, so yeah. So I think we've eaten them all, man. Hey, there's a jaguar, we'll probably eat it too.
Hey, listen, when I was I've eaten snake and stuff when I was in Mexico, it's all right. You get to eat what's available sometimes, so eat what you can catch. Yeah. So
and it tastes like chicken.
Yeah, so, doesn't most stuff, you know, at the end of the... Plus, if you cook it and season it right, almost anything's fine.
Yeah, snake is like the lean part of the chicken, but with a little fishy texture, a little, like that middle ground kind of thing.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, alligator, turtle, all kinds of stuff I've eaten, and it's like, yeah, it's fine. You know, you wouldn't even, you know, I'm not sure if I was at a 5-star restaurant, I would order it. You know, if steak was on the menu next to it, but like, I'd eat it again, and it's fine. You know,
I'll pick it over steak. Funny enough, I think it depends on how it's cooked, because there are lean meats.
Yeah,
And I've seen videos of people like, you know, frying it and stuff like that. Like, no, it's lean meat. When it's lean meat, you stew it, you know.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
It's much stronger than, you know, things like beef and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can make anything delicious. So I just always fascinated to talk about people who live in other countries and like what it's like there. So one last question about that. Then I want to talk to you about the storm and in other stuff. But what I'm always fascinated, like, what is the view of Nigerians of America? Like, what do they see? Do they talk about it? Do they consider it? And what is like their thoughts when they look at a country like America? Especially now.
Nigeria is a very, very diverse place. Like, it's very, very diverse. So you're going to have all the possible opinions you can imagine in your head. You're going to have a large group of people that share those views, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to have people that are like, yeah, man, I like what that Trump guy is doing, you know? I get to have people being like, what the hell is it doing? You know, yeah. I get to have everything. I get to have everything, you know. I get to have people being like, yeah, America, you know. You know, you might even have people that are more patriotic to America than Americans.
I believe that.
Yeah, and you'd have the whole spectrum of everything you can imagine, you know.
It's just, it's comforting to know that even in other countries, they can't agree on shit. So that helps me, that makes me feel better about my life here. So,
yeah. Well, when it comes to entertainment wise, though, I think you people have a strong competition with Korea now, because I think Koreans are starting to win the hearts of a lot of people more than American movies now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that. You guys get a lot of imported entertainment, I assume.
Yeah. So. Especially with female audience, especially they love their K-dramas a lot.
So that's a good segue to the comic book and stuff. How did you find comic books and that form of entertainment as a child? I mean, did they have comic books at the stores when you were a kid? Or, I mean, how did you discover that medium?
I'm not sure how I discovered it. You know, it's all those things that you just suddenly realize. I don't know if you've seen some of these jokes that people make where sometimes you try to look back at your childhood and you're like, it almost feels like you were asleep.
Yeah.
And then at a particular age, you just wake up and you're like, now I'm kind of like fully conscious. Yeah.
It's because we're in a simulation. So nothing is real. And they turn you off every night. What you just turned on today, you weren't a person before this.
You were just this automated stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You have are just memories.
Yeah. Those memories.
Words.
Yeah. It's just binary code. Yeah. Those memories are just ones and zeros. That's not real experiences.
Yeah, maybe. So that's kind of how comics feel like, you know. It's like I suddenly just realized that, oh yeah, comics exist, you know, even though I'd never seen one before.
Sure.
But if I'm to thoroughly analyze how I got to know about comics, I love cartoons a lot, you know, and in cartoons they will talk about comics. And then when you hear people talk, you also hear some analysis about, yeah, you see that Superman, that Batman, that stuff that you like came from something first, you know, from comics. So you're like, ooh, so comics, you know. You had newspaper strips, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then there's a, there's some comic books started being published here too. The most popular one called Super Strikers, which was a soccer comic book series, extremely popular, millions of copies sold, kind of thing.
Wow.
So worldwide, by the way, so not only in Nigeria. So extremely popular. So those kind of ones kind of like got you familiar with like the medium itself. But when it comes to superhero comics, that came like much, much later. You know, I always tell the story of there was a time in high school where I went to a supermarket with a couple of friends, and I just saw like this Spider-Man comic just in the corner somewhere. And I ran towards it like I finally found an American superhero comic for the first time in my life. You know, I took it, I flipped through it. It was a coloring book, and I was just so angry.
Oh, like, they fooled you.
Yeah. So that was how rare it was for me. So I think it's why I still kind of have like a little preference for digital comics, because I think I got familiar with digital superhero American comics first. So
that makes sense.
It's when, and I eventually had like my own laptop and stuff. I think it started with like YouTube videos and stuff where people say, oh, this is what happened in this, you know, all those websites that also summarize what happens in all these comics, you know,
yeah,
all those 50 times Batman beats Superman, you know, it starts there, you know, because you've been watching the animation and stuff. So from the animation, you graduate to reading those articles, watching those YouTube videos, you know, like Comics Explained, you know,
yeah,
the time T'Challa did this to Storm, you know, and you know, different stuff, you know, so you watch all that, you know, and then gradually I'm like, you know what, I think I can read these things myself, you know, and I started with Comixology, mm-hmm, but then you don't have any money and it's nice if you have any card or anything, so you read some of their free stuffs, you know, and different things like that. Then later you find out that, oh yeah, you know, hire a captain, you know, they're pirated stuff too, and you get into that, you know. So gradually you get to know more. At first I didn't even know it was piracy. I thought because they had adverts in them, because all those sites always have adverts, that, yeah, Marvel was getting paid based on the adverts.
Yeah.
I was clicking on that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Someone was getting paid. Probably.
Yeah, someone was getting paid.
Someone made some money. It probably wasn't Disney. But
like all these adverts are too much for it to be like, yeah, someone is getting paid, definitely, you know. Maybe if you want like advert free stuff, you go to Comixology. If you want like, if you're okay with the adverts thing, you read this one, you know. So that's what I thought for a long time, by the way. So I didn't even know it was like a bad thing or stuff like that. So, you know, later I think I got a job and stuff like that. So at least I had a little money, I had some card. So tried Comixology again, you know, put my card in, you know, different things like that. The Marvel Unlimited came later. So that's my experience with comics, you know. I didn't always like, it took me a while to find the comics that I loved too, you know. It took me experimenting here and there, here and
sure,
there. And even some that I thought I didn't like, I eventually still like them. I think, you know, what's the first comic you try if you've never tried reading comics before and you like superhero comics? It's the best-selling comic you try. It's just instinctive. Nobody tells you.
Well, it's such a big part of, I mean, it's 90% of the genre, right, is superhero comics. So it's easy to get sucked in.
So yeah, so the first one I tried was Batman.
Seems like easy.
So, and I think at that time it was Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo.
Okay, not a bad. All right, that's a good one to get into.
And I hated it.
Oh. Okay, all right. That's terrible.
So why did I hate it? You know, why did I hate it? Because I was coming from cartoons, and Greg Capullo's art style, at least for that issue, was this scratchy thing trying to do these oral vibes, and I'm like, why does this artwork look unfinished? Why is it all scratchy?
Right.
Why is it all neat and stuff? You know, like the artwork in the animation is always very crisp and neat.
Yeah, bubbly, rounded.
You're not used to the old scratchy thing.
Yeah, there's no like rendering in cartoons. It's very perfect, shiny, straight edges.
You know, yeah. So you're not seeing like all these scratchy things, you know, stuff like that. And I did also know that there was like artistic interpretations of characters. So I'm like, why does the scarecrow short and fat? You know, why is what's happening here? You know,
why does Joker not have a face?
Things like that, you know. So I'm just like, what's this? What are we doing here? You know. So I just dropped it. Like, nah. I couldn't even finish the issue. You know. So I tried. I was trying different comics, random comics. Like I even remember. Then later I was like, okay, you know what? Enough of the new comics. Let me read the old ones that we've all heard about. You know. So let me read Sin City by Frank Miller. I'm okay. Like,
well, man, you want to talk about scratchy art. That's a lot to adapt to. If you don't like Greg Capullo's scratchy art, Frank Miller's going to.
Frank Miller, like, how are you going to like it? You know, oddly enough, I liked it.
All right.
I don't know why. maybe because it was black and white, maybe it was the heavy inks, maybe because the ladies were fine. You know?
There you go. I don't know. There's some benefits.
Yeah. Because I think this is artistic, this thing, because I don't like comparing artistic stuff. But for someone new to comics and a little younger, I think you would pick Frank Miller's women over Greg Capullo's women.
Mm. Sure.
So I think maybe that kind of helps the choice of everything like that.
That makes sense.
So I like Sin City. I think the narration also helped guide me. If I didn't know how to like properly guide myself in the reading, it was heavy narrated, you know. I read Watchmen. I also read Killing Joke. Okay. I liked Killing Joke more than Watchmen. I think maybe because it was easier for me to read.
Watchmen is a lot and I think, to chew on. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I liked Brian Boland's art more, again, because it's closer to like this animated movie kind of
a little cleaner
cinematic style. Yeah. Especially, you know, when it was like colored, you know, it's the recolored one, the Brian Boland where he recolored it himself, you know. So I'm like, okay, I like this. Someone tried to get me into Mr. Miracle. I think I was liking it, you know. Then it was Saga that changed it. You know, this is still me trying to experiment.
Yeah,
reading old stuff, reading this, reading that, you know. But it was Saga that I think changed everything. I read Saga. Saga had a cartoon, like animated series art style.
Yeah. Very, know? What's her name? Fiona Staples. Yeah, Pia Guerrera is the person who did Why the Last Man with Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah, Fiona Staples did.
Yeah. The coloring is like, you know, cartoon coloring with the background being painted and the foreground being flat. You know, it was like animation. And, you know, Brian K. Vaughan also doesn't lean so much in narration. It's mostly dialogue. He also writes like the cinematic style. It was like watching a cartoon, you know. Mm-hmm. So that got me into someone that could read more than just a limited series, you know, that could read more than 5 issues, you know, that could follow an ongoing. So I think Saga got me into the habit, like, okay, I think I can read ongoing series now. So I started going to like things like, you know, Jeff Lemire's Old Man Logan, Fables. Okay. Fables by
Bill Willingham.
Is it William or Buckingham? I don't know, but yeah.
I think Willingham wrote it, and I think Buckingham did the art, but I think Bill, isn't it?
I hope I'm not getting the name wrong, but we know Fables. Yeah, we know the book. So I got into Fables too. You know, coming from a Disney head, you know, that was a good subversion, you know,
okay,
of all those stories that, you know, my parents made me watch and
things like that.
So I loved Fables a lot. That's also another long series that, you know, got me into like, I think I like ongoings now. because before I was just more of just give me a small story and let me read it.
Yeah, yeah.
So stories like Fables, Saga, got me into it. Then and I went back to read Why the Last Man. And, you know, when, spoiler alert, when is it 355 died, you know, I almost, you know, died alongside.
It's a tough one.
No.
It's a very tough one. You know, that's the hardest death in that book.
I think in any comic death, I don't think I've seen any comic death hits me that hard.
Well, because you know, like
some can be shocking and stuff, but this one like broke my heart. Like, no.
Well, because they never got a chance. Yorick and her never got a chance to be what they were. Like the whole time, you're like, will they? Won't? Then you're like, they're meant to be. And like then she's dead. And you're like, what the fuck? Like they never, they never even got a chance. Yeah, yeah that's that.
You know, so,
but also,
it was.
That was the brilliance of the book of Brian K. Vaughan, like this desperate, you know, times for this one guy who's left on Earth and how, you know, how just it really, I think if they would have gotten together, it would have really taken a lot of the gravity away from that story.
Yeah. So no. I would say Brian K. Vaughan's writing style made me that kind of Wednesday warrior kind of person.
Okay.
You know? That I just want more. I just want long form storytelling, you know. Yeah, I could be the type just that, you know, I want to read a trade and go, you know. I could be the type that I like when you tell them about the news and like, is it done? You know, and like I just, you know. So yeah, then I got obsessed with Brian K. Vaughan and he said his favorite writer was why am I missing his name? He wrote one of the most popular runs of The Punisher. He wrote Sarah for TKO.
He wrote the most popular runs of The Punisher. Garth Ennis?
He wrote Preacher.
Garth Ennis. Okay,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So he said his favorite writer was Garth Ennis.
Wait, Brian K. Vaughan's favorite comic book writer is Garth Ennis?
Yes.
That's blowing my mind right now because they are so diametrically opposed as storytellers. This I look at Brian K. Vaughan in a whole new light now. If Garth Ennis is his guy, like North Star.
But when you now like analyze it, you start seeing those elements.
Interesting. You know? I'm okay.
Their style is very different, but you start seeing those elements. You're like, yeah, Brian K. Vaughan, as much as he builds, he's not so afraid to break things, you know?
Yeah.
It might not be as edgy, and you see, they also have this way of building long form stories, you know, look at Preacher.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you see all those stuff. You see how they use very quirky characters too, you know, even though it's a different type of quirky characters, their characters are very, very
unique. They're very unique. Yeah. Yeah.
So you start seeing those similarities, despite that they're very different writers, you know? So I was like, oh, so I got into Garth Ennis through him, you know. I read Sarah by TKO, and I was like, damn, you know, I want to go back and read everything this guy has done. So I discovered more people. I think once you now discover Garth Ennis, it creates this new world. You don't know Grant Morrison, you don't know Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know those stuff. So, yeah, so, you know, so, yeah. And... yeah, it was. Then Jeff Lemire hooked me all the way from Essex County, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just following everything he did, all to like his Moon Knight run at Marvel, you know. So yeah, it's so I've been enjoying comics ever since, both discovering like the old things and reading the new stuff, you know. So yeah, that journey just made comics become like the number one medium for me. I just love this thing so much.
Yeah,
I love reading it. I love writing it. I love talking about it. I love analyzing it. Everything, you know.
Well, it is such a fantastic media. I mean, I'm the same. I mean, I've always been a comic book lover. I mean, you can see behind me. That's all comic books. I've got 35,000 comic books back here. It's the best medium to me. It's, you know, and you know, I started a comic book series a while back, and like I go to these conventions and talk to people, and like someone bought a book the other day, and then they messaged me. They're like, I've never read a comic book before, but I didn't know you could do this in comic books. Like, this is great. And I'm like, yeah, you can do anything in comic books. That's the best thing about the medium, is that, like, it's your imagination is your only budget, you know? And, you know, people, just like we talked earlier, people just think Batman, superheroes, capes, tights. And you're like, no, the story is the people and the, what, you know, the crazy situations around him is like the least interesting thing, you know, like I'm sure with writing Storm, the least interesting part about Storm is when she has to punch people in the face. That's the most boring part. The best part is her character and who she is and what that means in this crazy world, you know?
Now you want to find interesting ways to show that to the audience without spelling it out.
Right. Yeah, and so what brought you, were you like, did you ever get introduced to the X-Men before writing the book? Were you a fan, or how did that, how did that road to writing, you know, one of the biggest X-Men characters ever come?
I already knew Storm, but, you know, the way most people kind of like know Superman and Batman, you don't remember when.
Sure.
Because they've existed before you were born, you know. So you just know that, yeah, Superman. You just wake up one day like, oh yeah, Superman exists, Batman exists. So it's other characters that are like, oh yeah, I remember when I discovered Moon Knight or something, you know. But you don't remember when you discovered Batman or Superman, because they've always been there. So I'm younger, I was born in the 90s. So Storm had existed well before, had had animated series and everything well before I came in. You could already see logos and some of our stuff on backpacks or this thing. So it's just something that even though you've never watched anything with her, you kind of just know that there's this white-haired black girl that shoots electricity from her fingers, you know, something. So, but, you know, proper introduction, it's the movies first. Then, you know, like when I was doing like all this research into, you know, what had been before and stuff like that, I discovered that, oh, there was something that existed before, the X-Men animated series, and how it was goated and everything. So I was like, okay. So I went back to read all that. And occasionally I'll read a bunch of X-Men comics, you know. I'm not sure which one my first was, maybe it was House of M by Brian Michael Bendis. You know, so you read a bunch of X-Men comics, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
Maybe there's this big event you're reading, you see the X-Men show up, you know, different things. And then the Krakoa era came, so it became less of picking and choosing. So that became more of, okay, so I'm here now, you know. This is, I didn't, again, in a way I knew how to comics, you know. I didn't know like, oh, yeah, like these lines of books that have like their own kind of like mini continuity shared together.
Right.
I just saw these books at Marvel Comics. So I'm like, oh yeah, which one are they saying online that is very good right now? You know? So I didn't know there was X books or Avengers books or Spider books. It's just they're all Marvel books.
Yeah.
So just which one is good now, and then you just pick and choose. Oh yeah, Wolverine showed up in this one. Oh nice. Oh, Storm showed up in this one, you know. I didn't even know, like, you could pick stuff. And because I was also reading a lot of things in backlog, I would download things that add, like, names like the story arc, you know? Like, when you hear things like the Court of Owls, you know?
Right.
So, in my mind, I didn't even know there was, like, there's a Batman ongoing that is, like, issue 1, and going to issue 100 and keeps going. I thought, oh, people release, like, oh, Court of Owls. And then that's what I thought, you know.
Yeah, everything with these contained stories instead of this just never ending perpetuity, expanding continuity.
So, a lot of other stories. So, yes, I think I'd even gone, I didn't know there were titles like just Storm or something.
Yeah.
I just thought it was always like, oh, Batman, Court of Owls or something. You know? That's how I thought they were titled. So, yeah, I didn't know they were like story arcs inside these long stories, you know, that were interconnected and everything. So yeah, so that's how I was reading comics before. So it was Krakoa that made me realize that, oh, Because when people were screaming and saying that, oh, the X is back, you know, they are finally giving this, this, I was like, oh, so it's like this old thing. I don't have to read like Dark Phoenix Saga or something, something. You know, it always felt like, I didn't know they were all like things taken out of like this big Uncanny X-Men run that started from the 60s, yeah. You know, and just what that stuff. I thought they were like mini, mini stories, you know, and things like that. Like, so yeah. So that's kind of how I got to know about the X-Men, and then Marvel reached out to me if I would like to write Storm.
So what were you, I mean, you were doing your own comic book at this point, and that's how they discovered you, right?
I'd done one project for Marvel before Storm, which is I Am Iron Man.
Oh yeah, okay.
So, and before then, I also did a short story in Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood in the same, in issue one with Jonathan Hickman and Mark Guggenheim. That was when they discovered me. That time, I was doing a web comic called My Grandfather Was the God.
And, oh, that's right. Yeah.
I sent the web comic out to a lot of people that I kind of looked up to. I sent it to Tom Brevoort, so he read it and it's like, I want to try you guys out on a short story with Moon Knight, you know. We didn't even know that Jonathan Hickman was going to be on that same issue. If we knew, maybe would have, the tension would have been too much. It was when it was coming out, so like, wait, we're in the same book with Jonathan Hickman, you know. But at that point, we already knew the story was good, so we're like, yeah, more people are going to read it, you know. So, yeah, so there's that. But for Storm, I think I just finished writing Akogun, Brutalizer of Gods. So I was done writing it, but it was still coming out and Dotun was still illustrating, I think, the last chapter. So that's when they reached out and, you know, I was like, okay. I was scared. I was really, really scared. I didn't want to take it because at that point, I already knew that I wasn't oblivious like I was when I was doing Moon Knight and so many things. I already knew the industry to some certain extent. Mm. I knew it's always said that, oh, X-fans can be fickle. And
that's an understatement.
Whatever opinions they share, they are very strong at making you know, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They're not so shy about telling you when they're upset.
Yeah. I already kind of knew that. I also knew I'd be working on a black character, probably the most popular black character at Marvel. So, and I'm like, there's going to be so many expectations on me as a black writer as well, mm-hmm. you know. And if I mess it up, it's going to be like, it's going to come from both ends of the spectrum, you know. It's going to be like, black fans, it's going to be like, yeah, you messed up our one chance at this or something. This is how me, I was rationalizing it. I might be way off, you know.
Sure.
And for that people that are always like anti everything, they're like, you see, we told you to stop hiring these diversity hires, you know, and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
so there was all that. I was like when I was writing Iron Man, I think the only comment I got about, oh, you're a diversity hire, was probably like one, just one, you know. It didn't really come up, you know. And I'm like, I think on Storm, it's going to come up way more than that.
Yeah, so, there's more, definitely more ripeness for that, you know, not just because a bigger fan base with X-Men, a more volatile fan base and vocal fan base. And then, I mean, as a black writer taking on, I mean, not just black writer, an African writer taking on this character, there's definitely more opportunity for that. So, I mean, now that you're writing it and, you know, obviously, at least from an outsider's perspective, it seems like it's going well. I mean, I read the book. I'm a huge X-Men fan. Like, that's been my thing ever since I was a kid. The majority of these boxes is X-Men stuff. Storm is one of the few X-Men books right now that I really, really love. So you've got my vote anyway, if that matters for anything, counts for anything. But like, how important do you think it is if at all, for a writer to represent the character in some capacity, you know, because like, you know, again, I'm Mexican, and there's, although there's not a ton of like Latino characters out there, you know, it's interesting when they put a Latino writer on, like there's sometimes they put Latino writers on Latino characters and then the story kind of sucks. And I'm just like, you know, like this, you know, like I, like I'd almost rather have just like a better writer, you know, not that there can't be a good Latino writer, but I'm like, I just want this character I enjoy to be written well. I don't care what the person is writing it, but it is nice that like, you know, now doubling down, like African writer killing it on Storm, which is great. But like, how important do you think it is for a writer to represent the character they're writing, or does it matter at all?
It's like all good questions, you know.
Thank you. I thank you.
there isn't an answer.
Sure.
I would give several instances where there's a strength to it.
Yeah.
And I would also give an answer where it's like, does it really matter?
Yeah.
You know. For example, in issue 7 of Storm, Chuck grabs Storm by the hair and slams her against the ground. And for her to escape, she had to cut her hair.
Mm.
There's a small group of people that began to say it was anti-black.
Interesting.
That me doing that, it felt like I wanted to degrade a black character, knowing how important the hair is to a black woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And in issue 3 as well, when Storm and Wolverine had a sex scene, I was also accused of the same thing too. Being against black and black people in a relationship, that I was being anti-black, like I wasn't promoting black love.
Sure. Know? Yeah.
And I was actively against it and writing stories to teach against it, you know. Now, those are very serious accusations. Anti-black is just code for saying you are racist.
Mm.
Now, I think if it was a white writer, those accusations might be harder to survive.
Yeah.
So sometimes a little, I think the fact that I'm black kind of gives me a little immunity to be able to say, dude, I'm just trying to tell a good story here.
Mm.
You know, that Storm as a character herself has dated of different races.
Right.
Both black and white. I'm not the first person to introduce that. I'm not the first person to introduce having romance with Wolverine and tell people about what inspired that story. You know, to be able to say the reason why Chuck grabbed her hair is it's something that happens in fights a lot when you have long hair.
Yeah.
Your hair is grabbed.
Yeah, like and weapon used against
her. And the reason is because in the next issue, she gets boxed braids, which is a more kind of African hairstyle.
Mm.
I was even trying to make her even more African. I was trying to even make her more black.
Yeah.
By giving her box braids. So I could easily do that. And I think maybe if it was someone from another race or culture, maybe those allegations might have been taken more seriously. I don't know, because we don't live in that alternate world. So I think sometimes it might give you immunity to a certain extent to take some big swings.
Yeah, I agree with you. Definitely. On the other hand, I'd almost think that maybe because, you know, you are black, that the expectation is higher for you, and that if it was a white writer like you know, say, I don't know if those anybody would even had that thought. Like, I don't think anyone, I'm not sure people would be like, hey, why is this white writer making this black character sleep with a white guy? Because it's been done before. That's it, and it wasn't a problem. I think maybe the microscope is on you more because they're expecting you to make this character identify as African and black as possible, whereas they don't have that expectation from another writer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think in the early issues of Storm, there's a particular critic that was like, oh, she was expecting this to be more black. And, you know, so maybe that might be that, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, this story has to be very personal to Storm. And at the same time, it is black if you, like, look at it carefully, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it's a very dicey thing. So, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, it's that. Oh, what if I'm getting scrutinized more even because I'm black? You know?
Right, right.
And it's, what if I'm getting grace in some areas because I'm black, you know? And so it comes in different folds and shape. And it's like, I don't think there's any real answer to it, you know? I'm just happy that a lot of people are gravitating towards the book,
mm-hmm.
way more than people that are being apprehensive. People are having fun with it. And the book is exciting. The book is fun. You know, that's one. And I'm introducing lots of new ideas from various cultures across the world. And I see people being extremely receptive to those ideas. You know, I'm seeing Americans being receptive to ideas that were taken from, like, say, Australian mythology, from Asian mythology. I'm seeing Brazilians being receptive to, you know, ideas being taken from African mythology, from Greek mythology, you know, because I'm bringing in a lot of all these things there, and I'm so happy that everyone is being receptive and open to all these cool ideas from across the globe, because
yeah.
I find a way to visually represent that. The Storm series itself, in every issue, you go across different areas across the world, and that's what we've been trying to do, you know. So it's just, it's fun, it's exciting, it's diverse in its language, in its inspiration, in its themes, and diverse group of people are also enjoying it. So
yeah,
that's been fun.
I think it shows in the book, in the quality of the book, and you know, that the way people are gravitating to it. Like I said, it's one of the few X books right now that I'm really, really enjoying. So, when you, with this book, like, how much pressure was there knowing that you're a part of this bigger tapestry, you know, like the X, like you said, the fans can be fickle, knowing that you're a part of this, like, cause you know, it's not like writing a Moon Knight, part of a Moon Knight miniseries, or it's not even like writing the Moon Knight ongoing, like Jed MacKay has, which is great, but like, Moon Knight's audience is pretty small. You can kind of do what you want with him because he's not an A-list character. But when you're dealing with X-Men characters, like, there's a big spotlight on you and on those characters in that franchise. Like, what's the pressure like dealing with that? And how much do you have to juggle your book around the other books?
Okay, there are different forms of pressure. the first pressure about the Buddha, I didn't want to take the book, I already said that one. But there's also the pressure of Ali Wynn already like wrote this great run in X-Men Red. Chris Claremont did this fantastic, he loves Storm so much and he always gives her these fantastic stories. How do you match up with these great stories? You know, Greg Pak, the guy that did World War Hulk, you know, did the previous Storm solo run. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, you know, how did this? Oddly enough, that one wasn't much of pressure because I think Tom Rivers helped with that, because my first ever story with Marvel was shared with Jonathan Hickman. So, and it's like, if I can survive being on the same book with Jonathan Hickman, I think I can survive anything.
Yeah.
So that one wasn't much. It's like, yeah, that I think I'll be okay. So there isn't pressure there. But when it comes to the amount of feedback I'm getting, I had to leave Twitter because of that. That was getting too much. And the reason why that got a little too much is, I hope I'm not being egotistical, and I hope I'm correct in this assessment. The way I approach storytelling is very different. So a lot of times people think they know where the story is going.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already like very vocal and harsh and stuff towards this, and like it's not even going that direction. So it's just the feedback wasn't proving useful anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a trained computer scientist, so I love feedback because I also worked as a senior software developer for a university before I got into comics. So I love feedback. Like, oh yeah, I do this beta version of this app. You give me feedback. I'm like, okay, let me see how I can improve it. You know, that's, so I've always liked feedback, you know. All the stories I've done before now, I read reviews, I do everything, you know, and try to get feedback. But all those books have always been short stories. So this is like my first long-form storytelling. So the feedback is seeming less useful day by day. Mm. But it's like, that's not where this story is going, you know? Like, for example, in X-Man Hunt, where I wrote Cyclops. And people are like, oh my God, you hate Cyclops so much. That's why Cyclops is going through all this stuff. You know, you hate him so much. You try to villainize him. You try to this, you try to that, and stuff like that. And it's like, have you read the Bible? And when you see a prophet of doom, the prophet that is correct, that is saying all the things that is going to happen, they always hate him, they always despise him. It always seems as if he's crazy. Everything he's saying always seems like this. He always goes through the worst punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read like five chapters and you're like, oh my God, he was correct. Oh my God, he was correct. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's what I'm going for. I don't hate Cyclops. They're like, all of you all hate Cyclops, you know? And it's this and that. And if you read the latest issue of Storm, you would almost be like, oh, Cyclops was right.
Yeah,
true. He said, yeah, if you let Xavier go, you know, the government will start hitting down hard on you guys. And Storm gets it.
Yeah.
You know, you see that impact. And I was like, Cyclops was right. I was like, but you thought I was writing Cyclops to be wrong. You thought I was writing Cyclops to be a villain, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, no, like, it's not that, you know?
You gotta let him breathe a little.
Yeah, and it got to a level that some Cyclops fans now have vendetta against me. There's one that consistently raises allegations against me, tagging Tom Brevoort and sending things, you know. And I'm like, why, you know?
Yeah.
Because you think I hate Cyclops because of that story, you know. Now you are constantly trying to like ruin me and ruin the book, you know. Serious accounts, everything, I can share it to you after this, you know. Proper Cyclops, like I don't hate Cyclops, you know.
Yeah,
and it's that, you know, and it's maybe things like, oh yeah, Storm gains a new power set now or something, and it's like, oh yeah, it's because you want to make her like the most powerful being so that she can kick everybody's butts, you know, and blah 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 blah, and it's like, dude, there's a big villain that's, you know, in my mind, there's a big villain coming here. And guess what? Even the power she's gained would still be enough.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, and it's,
yeah,
like,
you gotta let this build.
I'm building up to something. I'm building up to something, you know? Like, I'm taking inspiration from a lot of, like, I give an example. I'm taking inspiration from the Bible. I'm taking inspiration from Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking inspiration from anime and manga and how they structure their stories, you know? I'm taking inspiration from classic American comics as well, you know? I'm taking inspiration from European comics. I'm taking inspiration from African storytelling. I'm taking inspiration from all these things. The way I structure stories, it's different from what you're familiar with. If you're trying to predict it, you chances are you are probably wrong, you know. So and it's that, you know, and it's like, so it's so I said that constant feedback might be like, okay,
yeah,
you know. You know, I think there was one issue in issue 3 where people are like, oh, you already forgot about the Storm Sanctuary that I introduced in issue 1. I'm like, dude, we're going to get back to it, you know?
Yeah.
It's coming back in issue 6, you know? And it's like, so it's things like that, you know? So it's like...
I think what people really want to know is, when are we going to find out what's up with that hippo? well, you got introduced to this hippo in issue number 1 and then never saw it again. Where'd you get this hippo?
You know, and you're good. And funny things, you're going to get stories about all these elements, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be gradual, you know. It's and a lot is inspired from, you know, manga and anime and the way they structure their stories and everything. And also in things like Brand Cave and how he structures his story, you know, if you read Saga, for example, you know, you would see, you see the translation ring that the translation jewelry that Alina and Marco uses, you know, early in the story, you know, and you hear about it. Later you realize that it was supposed to be like his former engagement ring from his former lover, you know, until you finally see that ex of Marco come, you know, get introduced into the story. It's sometimes you see a character like disappear in like issue 10 and they come up back up in issue 15, you know. It's similar to structure that you see like Invincible, you know. You know, like, I think some people also said it's Invincible, like, oh, in this latest season, like, Conquest came out of nowhere. Like, no, he didn't, you know. They've been saying that, oh, someone much worse than I would come, you know. Different things, you know, and it's, they've been building up to this, you know.
Yeah.
You just have to pay attention. So it's like, yeah, things would go and come back again later. You get introduced to plots that would, you know, pay off. And you know, it's long-form storytelling. What I realized while I was picking, trying to work on Storm is that, now, this is no knock on any approach or anything. It's just what I personally like. I found out that when I try reading a lot of ongoing series, I usually drop off pretty early. I would enjoy the first arc, the second arc. By the third arc, I'm getting weak. And by the fourth arc, I'm like, I'm done. And the reason is because most of those arcs are like standalone stories. You know, you do this standalone story, you do this standalone story, and it doesn't feel like they're interconnected in any way,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I become tired, like, you know, how many lessons is he going to learn, you know, and, you know, things like that. Our mentor is going to learn the same lesson. But the stories that always caught my attention the most, you know, things like Saga, Why the Last Man, and Fables, that it's just one story
mm-hmm.
that took 60 issues to tell.
Right, right.
And that's the approach I'm going with it.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you're going with that approach, it's different. So you're not going to see everything have this clean close in like 3 issues, in like 4 issues, because it's a 60 issue story. It's a 30 issue story, you know? So yeah, it's like that.
That brings me to my next question perfectly. Because like writing that way, in my opinion, is the best way to write for a long form story. And I love that approach. But kind of a double prong question. First of all, like in a perfect world, what's your long term goal for Storm writing wise? Like how long would you like to be on the book? And second of all, do you worry at all in such a volatile comic book market where, like, you know, books come and go very quickly, and you know, it doesn't take much for a book to slip below sales, and you know, they're just like, gotta go, we can't no underperformers. So how do you write with that in mind, that, you know, things can go away quickly, but also, you know, it's going well now? How long would ideally do you want this train to keep going for?
Ideally, I'm planning for 30 issues.
Okay.
Because this is also my first ongoing. I don't want to like go for 60. So I think I have that story for 30 issues.
Okay.
I know the story I want to tell for those 30 issues. But when it comes to how volatile the market is, man, when they reach out to Mr. Rightstorm, he asked me to plan for an ongoing, but I only get 5 issues. If it sells well, I get another 5 issues. So I get 5 issues greenlit every time. So I'm the egomaniac that is not writing as though I have 5 issues. I'm the egomaniac that's writing as though I have 30 issues under my belt. So there's that. But despite writing that way, I am always scared. It's even getting better now, because we've seen this. I've seen the sales being consistent for a long time now. But when I first started, when I was writing the first 5 issues, I wasn't sleeping. I couldn't sleep for weeks.
It's got to be daunting, I imagine.
I couldn't sleep. So that's why I think I wrote the first 5 issues like relatively very quickly, because that was the only thing I could do to pass the time. If I tried to sleep, I would wake up with nightmares and anxiety and everything, because every email that pops up, I'm always worried that's the email that says, sorry, you couldn't get past 5 issues.
Yeah.
I was just always worried that was the email that would say, yeah, sorry, this book is done, so, you know. And for a book that I'm putting so much of my energy into, so much of my mental capacity, of everything into, you know, it would hurt so much, you know. So, yeah, so it's the weight has been there. So so that's why I'm like really happy anytime, every time it comes out, it makes like the top 10 bestseller of the week. It's always like the top 40 bestseller of the month and everything. I'm like, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm always very happy. That's why I'm like, oh, do you know the letters page? It's always the editors that answers. I'm like, I want to be the one to write letters page. I want to communicate with the fans. I want to be able to thank them every issue. Like, you know, thank you for your support that we're able to keep doing this, you know? So it's been really nice. So yeah, I'm hoping we get the full 30 issues, but you know, the industry, so we'll see and we'll keep.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, because I mean, it's sometimes it's even out of a creator's hands, where like just the ex office says, well, we're going to revamp again, and Storm isn't in that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just.
Yeah, yeah.
So
like, imagine, I'm sure some people had like 50 issue plans during the Krakoa era.
Yeah.
And then Marvel is like, yeah, we're doing From the Ashes now.
Yeah, we're done with that. Bye.
Like, So like, what do you do then?
I mean, not only just after Storm, but during this too, are you do you have aspirations to write other Marvel books, potentially like more X-Men stuff? And are you like fielding any offers? Is it like now that this is going well, is Marvel like looking at you being like, hey, you know, maybe do you want to write this X-Men miniseries, or do you want to write this book, or is there more of that talk, and is there stuff that you personally want to do?
So far there hasn't really been anything per se like, oh, the Storm book is doing well, do you want to do something else? There hasn't been that yet. I think because I'm a new creator too, they want like to be sure, you know, mm-hmm. I can fly the plane and also land it.
Yeah.
So
good analogy.
So I think they might be watching out for that first. So there's that. So I'm not too worried about that. And writing an ongoing is kind of tough. It's really tough. So right now too, I think I'm opening to doing something more, you know, but I think right now too, I'm also like perfectly okay with just doing this one and making sure, like I said, land the plane perfectly and correctly and well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would make me happy to be like, yeah. Because there are creators that have had this, there have been a multiple series and I've not had the opportunity to actually have a successful series.
Yeah.
So I think I should be able to be appreciate that I do have one successful series right now. So, and to be able to, you know, make sure I captain it well. So I'm focusing on that. And right now too, I had dreams and aspirations before I started writing Storm. But now that I'm writing it, you know, the dreams are kind of changing. You know, for example, I love female characters a lot. But now I'm scared that I hope I don't get like pigeonholed into, oh, this guy that writes the black characters or this guy that writes the female characters. So sometimes you're like, you might want to do something, but you're like, do I pick it because I want to do it, or do I also pick it because that's a good career decision, you know?
That makes sense.
So I'm still too new to the industry to know like what the next move should be. Like some people will tell you that that's not called a pigeon, that's called a niche. Creators have niche, you know. They call it man when they want to do the big events. They call it man when they want to do the big plot things, you know. So that might just be it, you know. So maybe me trying to say, oh, I can do everything might actually be a bad move. I don't know too. So
yeah,
I'm still trying to figure it out. But I want to be able to have fun. And I like many characters, and I like many characters of different races, of different genders, of everything, and I want to be able to write them all without that limit. I think that's the goal for now.
Are there some specific characters you'd like to write, whether with Marvel, DC, or other?
The Fantastic Four is one, because I think I would have the room to like go crazy with a lot of like crazy ideas.
Yeah, bless you. Thank you.
I would have the opportunity to like go crazy with a lot of crazy ideas. Mm-hmm. So Fantastic Four is a good choice. Sif, from the Thor franchise. That's always a good one. Shuri is also a favorite character of mine. Vixen from DC.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I could do something cool with her. Alwyn already beat me to it, you know, doing something with the Green Lantern Joe. but maybe Joe in 616, definitely.
Yeah.
After reading Fast Sector, I fell in love with the character. Batman 100%. Superman as well. I think I have a proclivity of writing characters that are OP. So I think I don't think I would have a problem with writing Superman in his full glory. Wolverine is always cool. The Punisher can be a kind of twisted thing because everybody thinks I can't be twisted. So maybe that. So I might end up just listing every damn character.
You're just gonna name, well. Just gonna name the roster of every comic book.
Iron Man is also one, definitely. So yeah,
you're okay. You got a lot of. Well, then hopefully we see you on more stuff soon. Then are you any aspirations? I mean, I know you've done your own web comics and stuff like that. Have you thought about bringing some of that or new project to the American market, working, you know, indie comics or creator owned through Image, stuff like that?
Yeah. I'm trying to stabilize now. Well, I would try to get at the indie market again. You know, I've tried pitching to some of the big indie publishers before I go into Marvel. They always say no to me. So I don't think I've gotten out to get into that market yet. So, but maybe now that, you know, I have something like Storm to prove that, I can tell long form stories. Yeah. So maybe they will be more receptive to my pitches. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes time.
So I'll definitely try again.
Right on. Well, Murewa, we'll let you out here. You've been doing this for a while. Tell people anything coming up or where they can find you, if they want to follow you, social media, anything like that.
Yeah, for what's coming up, that's a Thunder War, and that's Storm 10 to Storm 12. If you've not been reading the Storm series, come and read Thunder War. This is going to be like the Court of Owls to like Scott Snyder's Batman run, where this is like God Butcher to Jason Aaron's Thor run, where we're aiming to like tell the biggest, baddest Storm cosmic Marvel story you've ever read ever. Like, this is
all right.
This is, we're trying to tell a Secret Wars level story inside the Storm series. This is some crazy level stuff. So come and read Thunder War, starting from Storm 10 to Storm 12. That's what's upcoming. So be excited for it. Have the biggest expectations. Don't limit expectations. Have the biggest expectations that we're going to, and we're still going to surpass it. So yeah, so come for Thunder War. I'm available now on Blue Sky. So thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Guys, if you are not reading Storm, I highly suggest it. I am an X-Men aficionado. I've read them all the books over the years. And I'll be frank, there's not much coming from the X office I like. Marvel's on my shit list right now. There's not a lot of Marvel's doing I love right now. Storm is one of like probably less than 5 books from monthly from Marvel that I really, really look forward to right now. And I think it might be the only one in the X line I really look forward to. So definitely give it a read and keep an eye out for anything else Murewa does. Lots of great stuff, and I look forward to reading you on more stuff soon. And as for me, guys, again, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, the calendar, live comedy dates coming to a town near you, and also conventions. I'm going to be across the country doing conventions with Killstand number 2. If you want to get your copies, if you haven't yet, hit the shop on inferno.earth and we will get you copies shipped out to you ASAP. So that's it, guys. We're going to get out of here for the week. We appreciate you hanging out. And for Social Art, I've been Deese. And for Murewa, thank you very much, guys. And we will see you all next week.